Blog Talk Radio.
Nalema kulila misozi, nikayanga na banja latu, kupadwa tinabadwa mushe, koma lelo lipazulika. Nikale kalapo kondwela leloeka tutikumbukila kweta chokela amai kuvutika mutima koma zoti tazisoa ni maona misozi masomwake ni mavuto abale ni mavuto.
Good morning from Dallas, Texas, and welcome to Zambia Blog Talk Radio, 1st October 2016. amazing how time can fly. We do thank everybody for joining us and for taking the time to be with us. It is 10 a.m. in Texas, Dallas. It's 11 p.m. Western Australia. They are getting ready to go to bed, and 4 p.m. in the UK, where our guest is joining us from, and 1700 hours Zambian local time. Thank you for joining us, my good friend Roger. That was a great show and a great discussion.
Yeah,
like I told you that our Pentecostal friends would say you were in the spirit.
That's correct.
Yes, because you talked about issues to do with the African Union, what they're going to be doing and what's going on there with business and infrastructure, negotiating power. And we're going to talk about some of those things with my guest here. And I'm very grateful to our colleagues, our partners who facilitate the things we do. Okay, joining us from... I believe he's already with us from a great country, one of the most powerful kingdoms that ever existed, Great Britain. Dr. Emmanuel Matsika is a research associate at NewRail. He carries out research on EU projects and things to do with improving security of passenger railway vehicles and enhancing the performance of railway freight vehicles. We'll be discussing some of those things and the type of work that he does. Dr. Matsika obtained his PhD in railway vehicle crashworthiness, focusing his research on modeling and experimental testing of a wheelchair occupant during a railway vehicle crash. He's a mechanical engineer by profession. He was also a lecturer at the University of Zambia before moving to where he is. Dr. Matsika, good afternoon, and thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for hosting me.
You are welcome, and thank you for taking the time to be with us today. We greatly appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Help us, for the sake of our listeners, as we build our discussion going into the things we're going to be talking about, what type of research work do you do?
I'm working at a research center called NewRail. It's based at Newcastle University in the northeast of England, and
yes,
it's one of the biggest research centers, research and consultancy centers in Europe. And we look at a number of areas which relate specifically to railway. We literally cover everything that goes on the railway business or sector. So we have about six departments. The first department looks at the infrastructure, so the permanent way, the actual rail line, the sleepers, the ballast, anything to do with that, and signaling systems. And then we have a department that looks at systems. So these are things like energy systems, signaling systems as well, things that are intangible. And then we also have a department that looks at rail vehicles, because, of course, at the end of the day, rail transport is about building the actual rolling stock. So that's actually the department where I belong, where we design both passenger and freight trains for various different engineering applications, depending on the requirements. and the other departments. These are more like the people who look at the economics and the logistics. Yeah, not those are not like technical. They are more like economists or people deal with the financing models and things like that. And then we do have the fifth department, which looks at strategy and policy, because we do believe that even if we've got technology or technical tools, they cannot be applied in a vacuum. You really need like some kind of policy support,
yes.
A framework under which you need to work. So this department looks at those aspects of policy, working with governments or political issues, things to do with that, so that we fit what we do within the context of national development or regional development in a wiser way rather than just something technical. And the final group looks at education, because we do believe that at the end of the day, without proper capacity building, really whatever we do can just end up in the waters. We need to build capacity. So because of that, we have a department that strictly looked at training people for short, and also we have like master's programs as well as PhD programs that we look at, all in the railway sector. So we literally cover all aspects related to railways.
Okay. So the work that you are doing at New Rail at the University of Coventry, is it, how does it translate? Newcastle University. How does it translate,
yes,
or how is it utilized in the, let's say, into the economy of Europe, into the economy of Asia and Africa for that matter? Do the manufacturers of these railway vehicles and wagons request for this information? What is the relationship, your research, the university, and the manufacturers out there?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because our center, the sort of research we conduct and consultancy falls under what's called applied research. We do not do what's called basic research. Yeah, basic research may not be utilized immediately, but what we work on, applied research. So we actually work with the operators, with the manufacturers, we work with government. So whatever we do is something that immediately translates into an input that is usable within the economic situation. We, for example, when it comes to rolling stock trains, the major manufacturers we have in Europe are Alstom, we've got Bombardier, and we've got Siemens. Those are companies we directly work with when they have a particular problem. For example, it could be an issue of lightweighting, which is one of the current problems we have. So they will say it's because of the trains are very heavy today, we end up using much energy to run them. Can we lightweight them so that we reduce the amount of energy we are using? That also relates to the environment. Then we can also have a better carbon footprint. So that problem is given to us, and we translate into developing a research or consultancy that helps to reduce the weight of a train using some either better materials or better design philosophy. And when we do that, then that's how constantly we are working with those companies. So we can also sometimes even develop manufacturing processes. If we, for example, come up with a new material, we can say, okay, this is how you actually develop or manufacture this product now using the new material. And we actually influence their manufacturing systems. And in many cases, we do reduce the cost of them doing business.
Excellent. So, for example, the one of the issues you've pointed out is the weight of the vehicles or the cargo cars. When the issue is presented to you, what time frame are we looking at here? Is it based on how long your work will take, or do the manufacturers or the people needing this work or information give you a timeline. What is the relationship between the two? How does it work?
Actually, there's no like a straight answer to that. It depends the type of client we are working with. In our research, one of the clients has been the European Union as a whole. So in this case, if they bring out a problem within Europe, say we've got this problem related, for example, to noise, we've got a problem related to excessive use of energy, that client, in this case, if it's the European Commission itself, they give you a budget, usually, and they give you a timeline. So it comes more or less prescribed. They'll tell you to say, okay, we have 3 million euros, and we're giving you 4 years in which you should have come up with this. And they give you certain like indicators of what you need to do. That's one type of client. But we also do have, like, if it's very specifically dealing with the companies, especially, you know, they're in business. And with those, they normally have very short time spans. They will come to you and say, okay, fine, there is so much, maybe there's a million euro in which this work should be done. We are giving you a maximum of 12 months, for example. Theirs is usually quite short term because, you know, people in business really want to get on and make manufacture what they need to manufacture, and they need to make profits. So it depends on the type of client really we are dealing with.
Okay. Your research for your PhD was based on a testing of a wheelchair occupant during a railway vehicle crash, which is called railway vehicle crashworthiness. Can you just explain to our listening audience? Yes, crashworthiness. It's you know, it's that Mufulira accent I'm having trouble with.
Okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
Actually, after I got my first degree, my bachelor's of engineering degree, I worked in Mufulira. So that was the first job I ever had, Mufulira division.
Oh, okay, at Mufulira Mine?
Yes. This is here, Mufulira division. That's where I was working in the transport department.
Okay, excellent. Yes. Excellent. So you've got a bit of that Mufulira thing in you as well. So, okay, explain crashworthiness.
So now, crashworthiness, the first word probably of what you talked about, it's probably a word that I might need to explain just a bit before I go into the work that I was conducting. Crashworthiness. Yes. In terms of the definition, is where you design a structure in a way, and the structure can be anything, but in this case, we're talking about transport. So we're talking about the rail vehicle itself. So
yes,
it's the design of a structure in such a way that in the event of a crash or violent collision, the structure collapses in such a controlled manner that it protects the lives of the occupants. So that's what crashworthiness is about. So at the end of the day, the good example is today's cars. Once you ram it into a wall, you find that it's got a crash zone in front that absorbs the energy, the crash energy, and thereby the energy ends up being absorbed in the structure rather than it going to the capsule where the people are, and therefore the level of injury that the people inside may sustain then could be reduced. So that's generally what crashworthiness is all about. Now, getting back to my PhD work, it's related to a group of passengers called wheelchair users who fall under the people who are disabled. In terms of disability, there's so much in terms of the groups. So it's not until 1990, so it's not a long time ago, that there's been a law that's worldwide that protected disabled people to use transportation. Because in the old days, they could even be discriminated against. So the first one actually used to be the American Disability Act, which protected people. And then in England, we had the Disability Discrimination Act of 1995. So it's those acts that help now protect the disabled people. And one of the groups of disabled people that was protected were wheelchair users. But now, what had happened was the law broadened the movement of disabled people around buildings or around transport systems. However, the problem was that while the accessibility aspects of the law had very well been articulated and implemented in as far as buildings are concerned. For example, you have wider doors, or you've got slanting surfaces, or you're using like ramps to go up to a vehicle or something. So that had been done. But one of the problems we had is inside the train itself. The wheelchair occupant parks inside the vehicle.
The train.
They're inside the train, sorry. In this case, you have the train running, but a few things can happen. For example, you can have violent braking. And unfortunately, a person on a wheelchair normally can move around. There's no law that says you should clamp a wheelchair onto the floor. And there is no law that says they have to use seat belts. So because of that, any violent braking would cause them to be projected in a dangerous way, usually. So my PhD was looking at the fact that here we have a new user of the trains who needs to be protected in the event of violent crashing. How do we make sure that should that happen, then they are protected? That was the research question. So I looked at, so I looked at the actual, what we call kinematics during a crash, which that's the actual motion that happens. And I also looked at what are the potential injuries that can happen as it is today. And then how can I redesign the wheelchair space in a way that should there be a crash, there is minimal injuries associated with a wheelchair user. And that's what my PhD was all about.
Okay. The world over uses railway transport, whether for passenger or hauling goods. To what extent, how much clientele do you deal with in Africa? That's my question.
In Africa, I think I can say, sadly, we have not yet been using railways to the level of advantage that is taken by the other continents. In my view, this is my personal view. My personal view is that we have, in the past, prioritized roads as a means to transport, particularly you talked about the heavier goods, the freight. We transport copper, a very, very dense metal, by roads, and we damage roads, and there are so many accidents that happen on the roads, and a lot of things that happen that are not desirable. So my view is, if you look at especially what we call high-speed rail, high-speed rail is virtually non-existent in Africa. So the use of railways in Africa is with a very minimal. While when you talk about America mostly freight, yes, it's very good that Europe, Asia, China in particular, these are developing, but Africa, of all the continents, is lagging behind extremely. Where we have railway systems, unfortunately, even the African Union does acknowledge the fact that even where the rail systems exist, they are poor. They are in a very poor state, where they do not give you the advantage of transporting goods by train, because a journey that should take you, for example, 3 hours can take you 3 days easily, because the infrastructure in a state of disrepair. So as far as rail is concerned, we are not utilizing railway the way I believe the rest of the world is utilizing railway.
Okay. It's of course something that we are Africans, and I know this forum is not restricted to Africans. We have friends of Africa who participate here, Americans, Europeans. You shared with me, you enlightened me about something that I wasn't even aware, and this would be good information for our listeners. There's a, I don't want to say, I want you to say it and inform our listeners. You shared with me about something, a project, a vision that the African Union is working on or is endeavoring to do. What is it called and what is it about?
Yeah. The African Union, which is the umbrella body for the whole Africa,
yes,
is trying to undertake a very, very ambitious program. Some people, in some of the writings, they use the phrase Vision 2063. Others are using the phrase Agenda 2063, but they're referring to the same thing. During the 50th anniversary of the founding of the OAU,
yes,
the African leaders decided to recommit themselves to what they call the vision, the old vision of an integrated, people-centered, prosperous Africa at peace with itself. So the issue is integration. In this case, that's what I'll look at. So they say we need to come up, we need to have, for this prosperity to happen, we need to be able to move. Transportation was identified as one of the most important enablers to development or poverty and alleviation as far as Africa was concerned. But the question then is, how do we go about developing those ideas, or how do we move their pronouncements into something tangible? So one of the programs that has been developed is called the Program for Infrastructure Development in Africa, which is called PIDA, P-I-D-A. So the Program for Infrastructure Development in Africa is the one which we'll be looking at. What my interest here is, and which is transportation,
yes,
and in particular, railway transportation. So we have a program, the whole program under the Agenda 2063 runs for 50 years. According to the way the African Union has set out now, the countries would be connected with high-speed railway. That is a very big, ambitious program. It can be done. It can be done. And I believe in the, from all that I know so far, there is enough will and support around to be able to achieve that. So Agenda 2063, really, among other things, they want to have this continental integration of transport, where you have high-speed rail connecting all the African capitals and all important economic hubs. So you might have a city like, say, Lagos. It may not be a capital now. Abuja is a capital.
Yes.
However, if Lagos is an important hub, they would want it to be linked to that. So that's the way the vision is going about. And they've actually started that program implementation from this year onwards for the next 50 years. And the first period of 10 years, they are doing what are called flagship programs. These flagship programs also includes what they call the Continental High Speed Rail Initiative, and that has started rolling out at the moment to actually start making this high-speed rail a reality in Africa, and thereby answer many of the transportation problems that we've been facing in terms of our rail network.
Okay. Do you know? Do you have any idea or any? You said they've started working on something. Do you have any idea or information about where it's going to start from, the starting point, or where they're going to begin constructing from to connect the cities of the country?
Okay. Again, I'll say based on what information that I have. The work is only starting from August of this year. So my understanding is the African Union is at the stage where they're trying to do the first feasibility studies on
okay.
what basis they will decide which one of the lines will form what they're calling flagship programs for the short term, which is the next 10 years. So that work will have to be done, I think, soon. By, say, January, the African Union will know exactly which one of those. My understanding, they are going to give some consultants to do work to decide which one of these lines should be prioritized as the first flagship. And then after that, they can roll it out into the rest of Africa in the next 50 years.
Dr. Matsika, in your
experience... So at the moment, it's not known.
Okay. Thank you for that response. In your experience, in your research, in your work, and in we are zeroing in into Africa, why do you think and why is railway transport better for Africa or would is more should be encouraged compared to road transport?
Yeah, so I could be biased in answering, but I think I'll try to be as neutral, as objective as possible. You know, the first question is, what is driving railway as the preferred means of transport today? Overall, if you look at which one of these is being pushed?
Yes.
Because we've got the four main areas, like we've got air, we've got sea, we've got road, we've got rail as the main ones in terms of the modes of transport. But if you look at today's world, in terms there are so many drivers. You've got environmental drivers, you've got social, economic, and this answers sustainable development. So if you look at the various modes of transport, my view is the mode of transport that seems to best give us sustainable development as a whole, my view is railway, and I'll say why. One, from the environmental point of view, for example, there are issues to do with, say, land use.
Yes.
You are in America, and you can see 8-lane roads. If you can just figure out the amount of space that you've used to have those 8-lane roads. However, when it comes to railway, you just need a very small widget through which so many of those use. So when it comes to land use, something as simple as land use, railway is very good. But also when you look at energy utilization, the person, energy utilization, you use far less energy per person for railway than any other mode of transport. When you look at safety, compare the carnage that happens on road. And I know that railway sometimes has accidents, like very recently, we just had 2-3 days ago, we had an accident in America where the train crashed into a station. I think it's just New Jersey or something. I think
yes, it is New Jersey.
So,
yes.
In New Jersey, yes. So you find that those things will happen. But if you look at the number in terms of safety, if you look at environmental reasons, if you look at the economic reasons, the railway right now, my view is it ticks all those boxes. And also the other thing from the economic point of view, I'll just give one example. If, like, the copper that we transport in Zambia, you need so many trucks, maybe 10 trucks, road vehicle trucks, to transport so much of copper. But for railways, you can couple even 20 or 30 of those equivalent, and you only need one locomotive to pull that. So the advantages of railway for me is so much, especially in today's world, that it's something worth revisiting and prioritizing. And that's why I'm not surprised that the African Union has identified this as the means of transport that they are actually pushing for the first time, I think, with the effort that we've never known before. And I'm just thinking, we both know about CISO Rhodes. CISO Rhodes had his dream that looked like it may never happen, but I am feeling that the African Union, through the link of the capitals, the dream of CISO Rhodes of Cape to Cairo might just actually come to happen very soon. So I believe we can maximize and utilize what we have in terms of railway. The opportunity is great.
Okay. So obviously, when we've talked about, I'm now trying to look at issues of accessibility with Africa. Obviously, when the countries, manufacturers import these railway vehicles, I don't know if there's any country in Africa which manufactures railway vehicles. Probably South Africa does, Nigeria, I'm guessing, the developed countries in Africa. Do they put in, do they consider specifications of accommodating people with disabilities? Would you have that information? Specifically, African government and the railway companies in Africa, do they consider that accessibility component?
Okay, I do not have that information. However, I can only speculate. Issues to do with the accessibility, even for a country as developed as the U.S., you find
that right.
only 20 years ago was there an act that actually protected the disabled. In England, again, it's not a long time ago. It's about, so this is so new that if we do not have such kind of, I'm not aware of a country that has a very robust act the way we have with these, especially in Europe and the US, and also to implement it. So on that basis, I would say that I'm not aware if accessibility is a very big design requirement, because accessibility is driven by, one, what the country that is importing, because most of the rolling stock we have in Africa is imported. There are not many manufacturers of trains. So most of the trains you have in Africa are imports. It's really up to the particular country that is importing to give the actual specifications, because the manufacturers will normally design the train according to the specifications given by their client. So if the client is not, does not put accessibility as an important aspect, and they feel that it is going to increase the cost of the train, then they will just simply not include it. Yeah, they will just not include it, because whenever you have accessibility, the cost usually goes up, because you have to put in place certain either space allocations or certain technologies that actually account for that. So I'm not very privy with what really happens in Africa in terms of purchase of trains, but I can only hope they do include accessibility as a design requirement whenever they are importing trains. And just to talk about, you talked about who manufactures. I'm not aware of any African country that actually fully manufactures trains. It's particularly people have designed, when you talk about freight, you can have the wagons, those can easily be manufactured. because that's just
money.
You see, you weld it, you put it on the bogey, it's running. But when it comes to passing the train, that's quite a different story altogether. So I'm not aware of a country in Africa where they actually make full trains. However, I'm aware, like in South Africa, they do make components, specific components for certain applications, but not a, like a whole train. I'm not aware of that. If they are doing that at the moment, they are probably doing it under the license of a, one of the big manufacturers like Alstom or Siemens or Bombardier. Yes.
Okay. Before I allow my colleagues who have called in to call in, you are listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio. We're talking to Dr. Emmanuel Matsika. He's a research associate at New Rail. Who are the largest manufacturers in this industry in the world?
Manufacturers of the trains themselves?
Yes. The cars.
The cars. Okay, yeah. So the actual trains, that's a... Things are changing today. So to the best of my knowledge, if you look at the whole world and the whole rail system, I would think, although I may not be very sure about this, but I would think that there's a company in China which manufactures the trains. There used to be two companies. One was called CNR, like the China Northern Rail, and one was called CSR, China Southern Rail. Just this year, they merged. They are under 1 year old. They merged into a big company called CSSR. This, now, in my view, is the biggest manufacturer of trains. But you're talking about in terms of the number of trains, because in China we've got the largest number of trains in the world. And because of that, they can easily dwarf the rest of the other companies. It's a very big company that makes many, many, many trains. As you may know, currently China, the longest high-speed rail in the world, they have about 20,000 kilometers of high-speed rail. Just to give you the perspective, in America, there is less than 100 kilometers of high-speed rail for passengers.
Wow.
In China, there's 20,000. And we have countries like, I think just so that you can see
Japan.
The perspective. Japan has got just thousands. I can't remember the exact number. Japan has got in thousands. It's less than 10,000. I can't remember the exact number. But as at now, China dwarfs every country. In the there's no country that has got as many kilometers of high-speed rail as China has at the moment.
China dwarfs the whole world in everything.
But the thing with high-speed rail, what is interesting is not a long time ago, say 20 years ago, China almost didn't have high-speed rail. But just in the past 20 years, they've just gone through from few thousands to right now, they've got 20,000 kilometers of high-speed rail.
Okay. Not to really take the discussion in a political discussion, Dr. Matsika. I know this argument always arises, don't compare this to that. What do you think propelled China to be where it is, specifically on railway? And 20 years ago, if you look at what's happening in Africa, we are perpetually in the same state of affairs. You can talk about China, like you have said, 20 years ago, there wasn't this, now there is that. You can talk about America and say, 20 years ago, there wasn't this, now there is that. Europe, where you are, you can probably point to something and say, 20 years ago, there wasn't this, now there is that. What propelled China to be where it is in terms of railway transport?
I think the first thing, it's an identification. I think I'm just speculating, One thing they did identify was a need. The problem of transportation, because of the large number of people in China. China still has the largest number of people in terms of population. The movements were cumbersome, but also China started developing. So as it was developing economically, there are things that happen when a country starts developing. One, the demand for transport goes up. Wherever there is development, the demand for transport goes up because goods and services and people start moving more. So the fluidity of movement of people and goods increases because of development. And that happened in China, where people needed to move, goods needed to move, and yet in the other modes of transport, like air, it's limited by, for example, how much many people it can carry, or in terms of the weight. So they had to, among the modes of transport, which one of them can answer their problem of making the people and goods move? And they discovered that the best was railway, and they committed themselves to a program which is very, very monstrous. It's a very big program where even if they now have 20,000 kilometers of high speed now, they are still constructing as we are talking. Very soon they will hit 8,000. It's a number of kilometers that's difficult to any country. I don't think any country can easily beat China when it comes to that. So my view was there was that push from the market. The people needed to move. Yes. Like one of the longest high-speed rail line we have in the world, it's nearly 3,000 kilometers from Beijing to Guangzhou. It's the longest high-speed line in the world. That one was propelled by the fact that, of course, you can travel by air, but they also had the normal rail in between, where it used to take, I don't think it used to take about 2 days or so to move between Beijing and Guangzhou. However, with the high-speed line, the journey has been reduced to 12 hours. So people are able now to move more quickly. I believe that the growth of China was propelled by demand from people due to development.
Excellent. Let me take one or two questions from my colleagues who have called in. Let's go to within Dallas. Daniel, Dr. Matsika, Daniel Nsomekela has got projects, things to do with disability. Daniel, go ahead, ask your question, and introduce yourself to our guest.
Good morning, Doctor. I'm very excited to learn that we have some Zambians there that are interested in issues of disability. My question is on the. I'm trying really to imagine how on the safety on the wheelchair how it works. I was trying to imagine when the pastor told me about it, just how it works. Assuming like in the car, there's airbag. There's an airbag where if there's an accident, then you're protected. So I use a train. I've used the train before. And then you are trapped. The safe belt, both on the ground and on your body, you're trapped. So I'm trying to imagine on the table how it's set, and I don't know whether you have a video on that.
Oh, you mean the table?
Yes.
The table on the train. The thing is with the for a wheelchair occupant, the on a train options really that one can look at. The one of the options was, can you secure the wheelchair to the floor and also use a belt, seat belt? To cut the long story short, a study that was conducted showed that it was not the best solution. So that's how come, for me, I thought the best way would be to redesign and so that the occupant sits around on a table, by a table, so that in the event of a crash, the table, which I would not go into details, with once you collide with it, it's designed in such a way that it collapses in a controlled manner and literally sucks in all the energy that is coming from the occupant with very minimal injuries should that happen. And then it also then at the end of the day creates more space for the person to egress after the crash has happened.
Okay.
So do you have a video for it?
I have simulation videos.
Yeah, that would be nice if you could share that so that you can look at it.
All right. I think there have been some presentations I've made. So what I can do is I can send you some presentation and also a video that can go with the presentation. If you can get my contacts from the presenter, and then I can share that with you.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Actually, Dr. Matsika, Daniel is working on a lot of projects and a lot of things to do with the people with disabilities in Zambia. I will connect the two of you so that you can discuss how you can probably both work together and contribute towards discussing issues of accessibility like you and I talked about behind the scenes. I will do that.
Yeah.
Okay, let me allow.
Yeah, I would definitely be happy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent. Let me allow my friend from Canada to come in, and then I'll go to Pennsylvania to Dr. Munsanje. Go ahead, Roger.
Thank you. Thank you, Nathan, and thank you, Dr. Masika, for joining us. My name is Roger here in Canada. Yeah, you talked about two things. One, the thing I observed my last time in Zambia, it is the amount of trucks which are carrying copper. You might find that in one row, 10 trucks in a row, and the buses yes. are having a difficult time passing them by, whether going to Lusaka or to the copper belt. The same problem yes. is the trucks moving sugar. I think it's from Ndola to the seaport. We have a lot of trucks. I don't know if you have
yes.
done any investigation, Dr. Masika. Why has our government abandoned the rail? And they've chosen to be transporting these things in a very expensive way, the way you have outlined it. One train engine can carry as many as 20 trucks can take. And someone might think that should be a no-brainer, common
yes.
sense. But why is our people choosing to use the road network instead of the train?
That's a tricky question because I honestly, personally, do not know as well why. However, I can talk about the solution. And that's why partly I got excited with the program that is being conducted by the African Union, where they've, at a very high level, they have acknowledged the importance of railway. And the way the program has been made, it's not just about connecting the capital cities and those hubs. They also have a way of encouraging what they are calling domesticated railway programs. So they intend to help the local governments to prioritize railway. So my understanding is that sooner or later, we should be seeing an improvement in that area because government, my view is that they've acknowledged the importance of railways, and with the African Union being the main mouthpiece at a very high level, then the government should actually act better now. That's what I can say for that.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Doctor. I really do. But the only question I think we are all imagining is why they have abandoned the rail. It's there. It is there. We have the Dazara. They've abandoned
it. For disrepair, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The question of why, I'll be honest with you, I don't know because I'm not in government, so I wouldn't be able to answer that properly. But all I can say is from what I've seen a lot of trucks, and they damage roads, and they also
yes.
contribute to the various accidents that happen.
Because
you've got this competition between the slow-moving trucks, and then these buses want to move faster because they are transporting people. There's a lot of overtaking involved, a lot of overtaking numbers in the roads, and you end up with head-on collisions because these smaller cars and the buses are trying to overtake the slower-moving trucks with laden with copper. So the problem is very, very big. My view is I don't know why the government has not really prioritized that. I can only hope that they do prioritize, but I don't know. I don't have the answer because I'm not in privy to the government and the way they do things.
Okay. Thanks, Roger. Let's go to
but
Dr.
I can be part of, but I can be part of the solution if the government
that's
wants
good.
To expert to
okay,
work
no.
on that.
Yeah, no, that's good. before this. Yeah, before this, Nathan, remember we talked about the link we have with the new Minister of Transportation.
Transport.
He was on this radio just some 2 or 3 weeks ago. So we can make that link.
We need to do that. We need to do that. Let's
no,
take our last question. We're running out of time.
Okay.
Dr. Munsanje, go ahead.
Yes, Dr. Masika, it was wonderful to hear from you, but I zeroed on the African Union ambitious program of connecting African cities through the rail line. I know that this is a very wonderful projecting, because it is going to bring jobs, it will bring trade among our people, and overall development in the African continent. The question I have for you is, how is this going to be funded? Are we going to get a loan from China or for IMF? There are countries like Zimbabwe who don't qualify to get a loan from the IMF.
Okay. Okay. Unfortunately, the question really, I wish I could direct it to the African Union itself, because I'm not privy to exactly what happens there. However, from the little I know, they have decided that they will implement this program under NEPAD. You probably know NEPAD. NEPAD is the new partnership for Africa's development. They are the implementing agency or organ of the African Union. And what they are doing at the moment, going from now up to about January, is they will be doing what's called a scoping study. And during the scoping study, they will identify the various routes that they need to flagship. And also, they will be identifying the financing model. So the financing model has not yet been developed. However, they will work on actually finding a suitable financing model. But generally, from my understanding of what's going on, the financing models could be a bit different depending on the program that we are looking at. For example, if we have a very good route, like say from Lagos to Abuja, and we know it can be very productive, it's lucrative. Easily, private sector can come in and actually do that. They know that this will give them money soon. So the actual financing model, honestly, right now I don't know. However, I can only imagine it will be case by case study, depending on the type of line that you're looking at. Those lines that can easily be funded by the private sector because they know they'll get money quickly out of it because it's lucrative. I'm sure the private sector can do that. And then others might need some kind of private partnership, public-private partnership initiatives, while the others might need loans. So I believe it will have to be a mixture of financing models depending on the rail line that they are looking at.
Excellent.
Like that.
As we conclude our discussion, Dr. Matsika, this you can respond in whichever way. I don't know the last time you were in Zambia and what observations you have made. I'll just put it very simply to you. How can we, number one, decongest Lusaka? Number two, reduce the road fatalities in the Zambian road?
The answers may seem simple, but really we have to build both roads. So one, we can have roads, but also from the railway point of view, I have seen what the other modes of transport can do. In Lusaka, for example, if we promote commuting using a simple system like what's called a light rail, or some people call it tram, you can actually you can reduce the number of people traveling by road by introducing smart rail systems like a tram system or light rail, simple and easy to implement. It's the simplest form of rail transportation that you can have, and it requires the minimum investment. That's one. So you promote people traveling by public transport, by smarter transport. Then in terms of fatalities, I'll be very honest with you, I decry the fact that we're losing so many. It's not necessary. We lose so many people on the roads.
Mm.
One of the ways, again, if I'm talking from the rail point of view, is we can congest the roads by having very reliable rail systems. Because right now, the railway system we have cannot compete with roads. If I travel by road from the Copper Belt to Lusaka, I'll be assured that the bus will leave at this time. I'll arrive at this reasonably. But by railway, it can even take 3 days because you've derailed somewhere. So if we can improve competitiveness of railway transportation in terms of reliability, speed, safety, and other aspects that go with the railway, then people can do what's called a mode shift from road to rail without even telling them. If you can just make the railway attractive, and that we can connect the major cities by proper good rail, and if we can do that, people can move their mode of transport from road to rail, and we decongest the roads. And also, of course, we have the heavy goods like freight moving from the road to the railway, so that we congest the roads. Right now, they are quite congested, and there's too much competition on the road.
Mm. Excellent. We shall continue our conversation with Dr. Matsika, who has been our guest here. He's a research associate at New Rail Research Hub. It's part of Newcastle University, right? Newcastle?
Yes.
The northeast of England, Dr. Matsika has been our guest. And by the way, he came to us courtesy of Untei. Like we always say, if you have an interesting topic or guest you'd like us to speak to, please do get in touch with us. Dr. Matsika, we thank you for taking the time and sharing your thoughts with us.
You're most welcome, Nathan. Thank you and good.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. My colleague in the first segment, Roger, great discussion. Do join us next week for another interesting topic. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah.